The view is a spin.
It is, I love it.
Okay, I'm not gonna do the gavel on the glass.
I've been waiting for that.
There we go. Yes, I could do that too. So, good evening, everybody, and for the recording, we are recording this. This is Monroe City Council meeting, a special meeting for Monday, January 28th, 2019. The time right now is 5:30 PM, and this is our retreat and workshop here at El Lago Mexican Restaurant on Farland Boulevard in Monroe. And Ms. Atkinson, will you please call the roll?
Certainly, council members present and establishing a quorum are Fargo, Kemp, Gamble, Hanford, and Cuddeback.
Sounds great. Now, we have next on our list the Pledge of Allegiance. We do not have a flag. If you're comfortable doing the Pledge of Allegiance without a flag, we can do that.
I'm comfortable.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Hanford.
Let's face the sunset. Picture the red, white, and blue waving. I pledge allegiance to the flag
of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Councilmember. Okay, we do have one person who would like to come forward and say a few words this evening, so I'm going to go ahead and invite Craig Ford.
Thank you so much for having me. I know that there is not any public comment time tonight, so I appreciate you taking time from your schedule, and I will make it quick to not interrupt your dinner and the rest of your meeting. I just want to come and personally invite everybody in this room. City Council members, you already have a personal invite. It should be in your mailbox right now, if not tomorrow, that we sent via mail for an invitation to our annual campaign kickoff. It's a karaoke party. We had it last year at El Lago here. We moved it to Song River to be a little bit bigger, to have more people. It's on February 8th from 6 to 9 p.m. There will be dinner served with your admission ticket, and we have a no-host bar there as well for that wants to partake in some beer and wine consumption. But it's an awesome opportunity for you to come and see what the YMCA is about. And it's not a fundraiser by any means. We're not really asking for a gift of any kind. It's really more of an education tool and a celebration to the start off for our annual campaign. So there'll be a couple testimonials and a lot of great singing. I would love to invite any of you to come sing a song with us on February 8th, and I will pass it around for anybody that's not on City Council who did not get an invitation in the mail. And that's all I want to say tonight. I appreciate your time, and I hope we'll see you later. So thank you for having me.
Thank you very much.
I already have my tickets. My advice.
Since we did open up for public comment, is there anybody else who would like to speak to the City Council this evening?
No.
Okay, seeing none. We'll go ahead and I'm multitasking here, sorry. We're going to move on to discussion items. This is item number one, AB 19018, Vision 2050, and Ms. Knight will go ahead and lead us off.
Thank you so much. And for council and members of the public who are here, I did put together this PowerPoint just because I think it'll be easier for us to walk through it. I know it's easier for me when I have visuals in front of me as opposed to a page filled with words. I put this together to help us just concentrate on the things that I'm hoping that we can get some direction from council on this evening about. The reason why this is in front of us this evening is because when the council approved the Ad Hoc Economic Development Advisory Board last year and the board put together a set of recommendations, one of the recommendations that the board had for the City Council was to come back and take a look at its vision and mission statement and core values. And that was in part because the board really struggled with putting together a set of recommendations because it wasn't clear to members of the board and members of the community what the city's vision is.
Sorry.
No, you're good.
I'm sorry.
No, you're fine.
Go ahead.
I'll
bring it. Number three.
So the questions that I have on the first page are really about the city's vision. And this is one of the things that the Economic Development Advisory Board struggled with is in looking ahead to where we're going to be into the future, our next comprehensive plan update is going to be looking at the year 2050. And so I put together just kind of a brief montage of photos from 1999. That center photo to me looks like the 1970s, but the website for the City of Monroe Historical Society said this was 1999, And then 2050, and it's hard to see in this picture, but that building that's on the corner is a Trader Joe's, because I know that's been something that the community has been wanting for a long time. So in 2050, Monroe is a community of 35,000 people, and that actually comes from our historic growth patterns. So despite the ups and downs, you know, some years are really good and we get maybe a 3.5 or 4% growth, and some years, like during the recession, we had no growth whatsoever. But over a period of about 30 years, our traditional growth pattern is about 2%. And so if you take where we are today at about 18,000 people and increase that over the next 30 years, we're going to be a community of about 35,000. So the question that we're looking to answer is, what do we want the city to look like in 30 years? And the one question that I ran across that I thought was really helpful was, what are the big, hairy, audacious goals do we want to accomplish with our vision? And that's really the purpose of a vision. It's to help people visualize what is it that we are going to be in the year 2050. It's interesting because I actually took a look online to see what do futurists say we're going to be like in 2050, not necessarily the city of Monroe, but the communities in general, the world in general. And I thought, looking out to 2050, which is only 30 years away, it's just not that far away, I thought futurists had really identified things that I'm not thinking that we're going to see yet, like 6,000-story buildings. I mean, it just was really kind of way beyond, I think, the realm of reasonable. But if you think of where we've been just in the last 30 years, which wasn't that long ago, 1970, 1980s, right, and where we're going to be in the next 30 years. But what do we want our community to look like? And I think the other question that we haven't answered or looked at in a while is, what are our core values? And so that's part of the conversation today, is not just about vision and mission, but what are the strategic or core values that define who we are as a community? And do we want to come back and take a second look at those? And so if you turn to the next page in the PowerPoint presentation, what we're asking of you today is really to review the city's mission and vision statements. So we have adopted mission and vision statements in the past, and discuss the city's core values. We're not going to go through any core values exercise here today, but I do want to have some direction from council whether or not that's something that you're interested in doing. And then we have outlined a set of alternatives for looking at adopting a vision for 2050 and what that might also look like. And then providing direction to Mayor Thomas and city staff about how we can help the council walk through those. So the next slide on the PowerPoint presentation is this pyramid. So if you're looking at that pyramid, what struck me about this pyramid is that we as a community and as a council, mayor and staff, what we've really done is we've worked at the base of this. So last year, the council adopted a set of goals and a set of strategies and a 6-year strategic plan. And so we've really accomplished the base of this pyramid. What I'm curious about, and I think what the community is looking for some direction from council on, is the top of that pyramid, and whether or not we have some shared values that will help guide initiation of a vision statement and a mission statement. So that's really what we're after today, is we've got the bottom of the pyramid completed, but what are we doing to address the top of the pyramid? And then we need to go back and take a second look and ensure, if we are going to take a look at a vision and mission statement, then how do all those things come back into alignment together? And I have to give a lot of credit to two people that are sitting here tonight. One is Liz Atkinson and the other is Jacob Roberts. Both of them have been going back and getting additional education, master's degrees, and they both started last year. And one of the things that their classes took them through was this idea of organizations starting with clear shared values, a mission, and a vision statement before you jump in and start working on then the bottom of that pyramid where we are today, which is the strategic plan piece, right? The implementation, the action items. So I'd like to take a look then tonight and get some feedback from the City Council about the top of that pyramid, and that's what we're going to be focused on. So taking a look then at the next page, just a reminder and a refresher about our strategic issues and our goals. So again, these are the strategic issues and goals that the City Council adopted last year, and this is what we ended up building our 6-year strategic plan on. And so it's safe and secure, environment and resources, regional destination, managing growth, housing, utilities and transportation. All of these things actually come straight out of your 20-year comprehensive plan. So your current comprehensive plan is built around these items as being your strategic issues, And then, again, we've got then the task or the to-do list that follow on beyond that. What do they say? Don't sell the steak, sell the sizzle.
Measurement for success is on those. So when you look at like housing update development regulations, to what end you go, so what? It doesn't mean that we made improvement. We updated the regulations, but was it in a good direction? Did it achieve what we wanted to? See what I'm saying? So it's when you see this, it's only like a piece of the picture. It's like a task list of what we've done, but it doesn't necessarily indicate we moved in a right direction, or we made improvement, our progress, or we achieved a certain goal. Like, yeah, go ahead.
It's okay. Is that the performance measures that are right underneath the goals? Am I, so that I'm tracking?
Oh, she's on the next page.
I'm on the pyramid. Sorry. Never mind.
Yeah. No, just this one where it might say manage growth, update development regulations.
Got it.
But then you go, okay, what really does that mean? Does that mean that we hit certain measurements? You know, was it in a good direction? Was it what the community wanted? Did it move our community forward? There's not much there, I guess. It's more like check that box, we did it, but it doesn't mean that we did it well. So I think that's something we should consider as we move forward when we look at this, is what really is the goal and how do you measure whether you attained it.
Right, and I would agree with you, and I think in looking at these goals, I think looking back, it's that vision that's missing, right?
Yeah.
It's like you're doing affordable housing, but toward what end? Is that so we can, you know, house people as they age in this community, right? I mean, is that the goal that people can, you know, come here, raise a family here, and then spend time with their grandchildren here, right? If that's your vision. So I would agree with you. The other thing that struck me while you were talking is that some of those things may actually be defined in the comprehensive plan. They just aren't included here.
Right.
And so part of me thinks that if we go back in and take a look at the comprehensive plan under the goals section, because these are built on the comprehensive plan policies and elements, that we'll find some of those in there. Probably not all, but some of them.
Right.
Anybody else have any questions? And this is sort of a retreat, so just
jump in,
yeah, thanks.
Yep, so the next page then talks about the strategic plan, and this is the strategic plan that the council adopted at the end of October, and I think, again, looking at the bottom of the pyramid, we have those strategic goals and initiatives, and we have a strategic plan, presumably, to implement those goals and initiatives. I think what the community is wondering about, and what you may want to consider, is how do these then implement and move you towards that larger vision of 2050? So are these actually moving us in the direction that we want to go? And the question is, well, what direction do we want to go? And getting some guidance from council on that in the coming year would be helpful.
May I jump in? So from a finance standpoint, too, what would be helpful is we've got all these aspirations, all these goals, all these things we want to accomplish. But if we have a vision, without a vision, we don't know if that goal isn't moving us towards that vision, then
right.
In some ways, it's wasted resources.
Mm-hmm.
And as you can see on the 6-year strategic plan, there's a lot of issues to address, you know, and that's a lot of money. and obviously we don't have enough to cover it all, how do you start prioritizing?
Right.
So, and so again, it gets back to without that vision, without those core values to help drive that vision, where's the best place for money for the limited resources?
So in taking another look at that pyramid, I really struggled a little bit with how to organize the discussion this evening. I wasn't sure whether or not we should start with vision and mission and then go to core values, or whether or not we should start with core values and then go on to vision and mission. And in the end, I decided that I really believe, and I'm looking for some feedback from council on this, that it's really the core values, I think, that should be driving everything else. And so those core values may be things like family. They've got the ones that Monroe previously adopted down at the bottom of the page: sense of community, excellence, responsiveness, vision, and efficiency. And I actually thought that that was a pretty good set of core values. It wasn't clear to me what year that was actually adopted. Both Liz and I have on our wall a frame of the vision, mission, and values, and these were the values that were included in that. So I don't know if Brad had any insight as to when those might have been adopted. Do you? Do you happen to know? You do, but your mouth is full. I'm sorry.
Use your hands.
Interpreter dance.
That is fine. Finger puppets.
It was a while ago. I do believe Mayor Thomas was on the council at that time, and we did it in the school district at a retreat, the school district admin building.
Yep.
So that was 95-ish?
Oh, 95. I wasn't on council.
You weren't on council? Okay. When were you on council?
No, but we did something in 04.
Okay. 04? Okay.
But yeah, if it was 95, that predates.
Yeah, it was 90, yeah. So 14 years ago?
And that brings up one of the downsides of doing exercises like this, right, is that you do them, then they're a standalone, and then over time they don't get refreshed annually as part of your workshop update or your council retreat. And then they just kind of drift by the wayside, and staff, you know, doesn't recall them and then can't tend to implement them. So in thinking through whether or not you think this exercise is going to be worthwhile to you, consider how are we going to continue to make sure that we remember them and retain them and continue to live them if we're going to adopt them. I thought it was interesting because in some of the reading that I did, they broke out core values into two sections. Your actual core values that describe the organization that you have today. And then there's also a tendency to want to adopt or to adopt aspirational values, or those values that you would like to see implemented but may not necessarily describe you today. And the one example that I think struck me, particularly for the Monroe community, is we may need to develop a new value such as cultural inclusiveness that we haven't previously adopted, right? And so, again, that could be something that's aspirational. I don't think it's something necessarily that we've focused on up until this time, but if it's something that the council is interested in adopting and working towards and implementing, as Ms. Hassert suggested, some financing and some effort behind it, then that is something that we would want to talk about and continue to potentially consider. So any questions about the core values versus aspirational?
I'm sorry, what did you say was something inclusiveness?
Oh, so under aspirational values on the page right here, there is an example of an aspirational value, cultural inclusiveness.
Got it, okay.
So something Thank that we don't currently exercise at the City of Monroe. I don't think it's a core value to us right now, but maybe it is something that we want to adopt as an aspirational value.
You don't think it's a core value right now?
I haven't heard anybody speak to it.
Well, I've seen it in action, so that just kind of surprised me. But that's okay.
You're talking about a written core value.
I haven't seen it in action either.
So.
Okay.
I would agree with that.
Or maybe it's in action, but we're not celebrating it enough.
That would make sense.
Mm-hmm. So looking at the next page then, it's just an example of core values, and I happen to come across Starbucks core values, which aren't short, and if I were a Starbucks employee, I'm not sure that I could actually articulate those, but they do have them printed, and I think when you read down the list, I think they live them. I like the last one. Which is honest. They are in business to make money. So any more questions or comments about core values? The way that I've heard it described too is that if you have a mission and vision, your core values are the actual way you go about implementing the mission and vision once you have a set of core values. So under vision, I did find a vision for the City of Monroe circa 2009. And the thing that strikes me about that, to be a vibrant community that maintains a sense of place and identity, is that I think it's missing some of the bullet points that describe a vision, which is the desired future state or mental picture, guidance and inspiration, and functions as a North Star. I do think it is written succinctly, but I'm not sure that it's really inspirational. And so I went out looking for other vision statements of other communities and came across this one from Buda, Texas, that I actually thought was pretty good, in part because it sounds authentic, right? It's not just a statement of words, but it really has some authenticity buried in it. I love the fact, too, that they use an exclamation point at the end of their vision statement. I'm not a huge fan of exclamation points, but in this case, I think it's great. Keep kids here and keep them coming back here when they grow up. I mean, that almost describes Monroe in some ways, right? I mean, I think that's something that we aspire to here in the city. I think also family-friendly and metropolitan enough to stay up with the times, right? I mean, that's a pretty good one. If I could just plagiarize that, I might. Ready to move on.
Challenge might be to keep the town clean.
What was that?
The challenge might be to be keep the town clean.
Keeping the town clean. It is a vision, though, right? So that is something that you would be striving to do. And in that case, if you were to implement this, you'd be thinking about code enforcement. So if that's something that we aspire to, are we putting money in code enforcement to ensure that the town stays clean, and are we prepared to implement that and support it when folks come to council and are not happy because we're saying, hey, folks, you got to cut your weeds, right? I mean, that's kind of the implementation of a vision statement, and you have to be prepared to live by it. So any other questions about vision? So turning to the next page then, I printed out the city's current vision statement as defined in the city's comprehensive plan. And so what you see there then is a vision statement as a set of bullet points. And I'm not sure, because I wasn't here during the development of the comprehensive plan, maybe somebody on council or a staff member can remind everybody, how did we end up with a bullet point list as a vision statement as opposed to kind of a more traditional, you know, kind of real statement of, in sentences? Was there something behind that?
I'm trying to remember. Was this with the consultant too, Brad?
This is right. Post-consultant.
Post-consultant, but we went through the exercises with the consultant.
Right, and I seem to remember the Planning Commission wanted to have something that was simple.
Well, it was also because we were, if I remember correctly, the whole concept behind the bullets was kind of like pillars, that they all were of equal value, the pillars of the house, the pillars of the town, that we had areas of focus, and that's how he came up with the bullets, if I remember correctly.
Well, that
I'm
makes
trying
sense.
To access that part of the drive in my brain right now.
I see now. So it's divided up by the areas that were the regions in the community
exactly.
Based on that map and the comprehensive plan. Got it.
Yeah, I think another thing was, if I remember, we worked really hard, the Planning Commission worked really hard on simplifying the language and making it more user-friendly, making it where kind of a citizen could take a look at it and understand it, or it wasn't overwhelming, or I think that's where kind of the bullet points came in.
And to your point earlier, Patsy, it was also, you know, as far as measurables, you know, you can look at these bulleted statements. It's not just some abstract statement. If you could look at those bullets, and then we had tactics underneath those bullets, you could look back and say, okay, yeah, we've made progress here, as opposed to just an abstract kind of statement.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's what you see when you see goals in Chapter 2, is that you go straight from that vision statement in Chapter 2 over to this list of goals in Chapter 2. So it sounds like there was some intent then behind the current set of goals and vision statement.
Okay. I don't know myself, like, why. I don't recall either the vision statement, you just look below at all those bullet points. If those were crafted into a two sentences or three sentences, then you have this statement, and I think then you would connect all of those bullet points, and I think that would really have more of an impact. But yeah, I really don't have an answer for that either. How we get it that way.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with Mike in that, like, improve downtown, improve highway commercial districts. Both of those speak to improving areas of town that are already developed with redevelopment, and some of these things could kind of stand on their own as part of that sentence, like keep neighborhoods vital, safe, attractive. But you're right, there are some elements here that I think would inform a higher end vision statement if that were of interest.
I'm just curious about the first, what the intent was Keith Monroe Compact. What was the point with Keith Monroe Compact?
I think that was a sprawl comment, if I remember right.
Yeah.
Sprawl of what way? Industrial? Or
no, just a
retail or housing?
Housing.
Yeah, housing.
My recollection was that people liked exactly what you're looking at behind me, which is being able to see the urban-rural interface, being able to look out and see the cows, being able to look out and see the trees. And I think, to my recollection, Keith Monroe Compact was to encourage urban growth within the city limits and to build up the city and to be intentional about annexing our urban growth area rather than just having development, you know, happen in the farmlands and whatnot.
Yeah, I remember specifically having conversations where we used examples of other city locations where you're like, yeah, I never know when I'm leaving the city or not, just as continuous.
Yep, the Seattle area being sort of the, you don't know if you're in Shoreline or if you're in whatever city is next to Shoreline. Seattle.
So you might describe that as, you know, easy access to nature and the outdoors, for example. Any other comments about how that vision statement was developed or created and how that led into the goals?
And are you saying this took the place of the to be a vibrant community that maintains a sense of place and identity? But I think what's important is that if we have a vision statement and a mission statement, that's what we use on everything, that it's not different on different documents. Because that's what it seems like here.
Right, so to be a vibrant community that maintains a sense of place and identity, that was replaced with the bullet point list.
Okay, but you're saying then that's not our vision statement anymore.
No.
Okay.
That's my understanding, is that that's not the vision statement anymore. When the council adopted the update to the comp plan, this became your new vision statement.
Okay.
And the Economic Development Advisory Board, I mean, they used this slide,
and
really struggled with the bullet point list because they felt like it didn't describe what we were going to be like in 2050. It wasn't aspirational in that respect, and provides like a future vision for the city of Monroe.
Okay, I didn't get that in the agenda bill. It kept mentioning that to be a vibrant community that maintains a sense of place and identity. So I didn't realize that it had been replaced.
And again, that hasn't been super clear in the documentation. I mean, there wasn't anything that said, we're now, this is no longer, and it's been retired, and, you know, here's the new vision statement.
Right.
It's just fallen out of use. And my assumption was that's because the comprehensive plan was adopted.
Okay.
And so that's what replaced it.
Okay.
Deborah, I think it reads to me, if being an outsider looking at it more as a goals list, a task list, it doesn't provide any flexibility or nimbleness to change because times change quick, technology is constantly flowing, and this kind of locks you into almost a set of parameters and goals rather than being more fluid.
Yep. Great, those are helpful comments, thank you. So the next page then moves on to talk about the mission statement. So the mission statement is supposed to describe our purpose. So what is the purpose of the city? And you can see that there's two mission statements that the city has previously adopted, and they're pretty close together. The first is promote and protect the public interest by providing the finest possible municipal services. I thought that one was interesting because it didn't tie back into at what cost, right? So the finest, I mean, that, you know, raises a pretty high bar. And if you're thinking about, well, how does that mission statement then transfer down into daily operations? In that case, then you would expect that you're going to be providing, you know, city staff and the community with some, you know, pretty expensive services potentially, right? The second one I think was broader. And it added some additional words in there about we're committed to providing the finest possible municipal services while preserving the city's unique sense of community and quality of life. And I read that one and thought it doesn't really describe what that unique sense of community is, and it doesn't describe what the quality of life is either. So again, some pretty ambiguous statements without some more definition around them, right? It's like, what is that quality of life that we're trying to preserve? And it reads, you know, a lot like every other vision and mission statement that I think I've seen in a number of communities as I was doing a little bit of research. So
I'm just curious. So the first one, the biggest concern is the cost or people reading into it that we're going to spend whatever it takes to gold plate the sidewalks or something. And that's the concern with that one, as opposed to just seeing that as the bar. And I'll speak as long as I can so you can eat. I think that's the point I'm trying to hit is more of a goal setting. The mission is more of a goal setting as opposed to a specific that we're going to spend $100 million or we're going to spend $150 to accomplish this end. I think it lends itself to a little ambiguity, as you were mentioning, that it's more of an opportunity and a target that you may not reach. And I hope that makes sense. And I think I've run out, so I'm sorry.
I'm Betty D, so your time is perfect.
I think what you're saying, one of the things that I kind of feel is like looking at finest possible municipal services, I'm looking for authentic. And I'm looking for genuine and finest possible municipal services. You're right, what does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
Within what bookends, how much? Public interest, what are we talking about? You brought it up, a unique sense of community. What is unique? What do we want to focus on? Quality of life, what exactly is that? There are terms that I think were thrown around in the 90s and early pre-2010 that it's like everybody seemed to know what you were talking about when you supported quality of life, but really what is it? So, I would agree. Having better bookends, something that's more descriptive, something that doesn't sound like every other goal and mission statement would be good. And something that's authentic.
No, when you say authentic, you mean something more detailed?
No, genuine. Authentic. Something that has meaning to it. So when I say something that's authentic, not just a word that could be taken a number of different ways, but something that really means something. So not detailed, but
I'm taking well-defined description.
Yeah.
Well-defined.
Not just using being careful with our words, selecting words that mean something, so that, like Deborah said, unique. What is unique to you versus unique to Patsy? Yeah. And some of the things that I'm reading here, like I said, things you might see in any number of promotional or campaign or any other brochures and whatnot, I think you want to have something that's authentic. Just what does quality of life mean? What does unique mean? What does finest possible services mean?
Okay.
And it's not the details, just finding new words.
Okay.
Yeah. Thesaurus. There.
Dinosaurs.
Yeah. Any other comments on mission, the current mission statement, or what a mission statement is supposed to accomplish? I did think it was interesting that it's supposed to be something that all employees should be able to articulate upon request, which is why are we as employees here, right? What is it that we're supposed to be delivering on the behalf of the city council and the community, you know, to our customers and vendors? So how do we go about doing that business? So in taking a look at the next page, I added in the adventure starts here, which is really the city's tagline. And again, I can't take credit for this. This is something that Liz and I talked briefly about. She brought it up to me when we were discussing this, putting this together, because she asked me, she said, well, where does the tagline, the adventure starts here, fit in? Because if you read this as being, we're trying to promote ourselves as a place where people can come and have adventure, there is nothing right now in our vision statement or in our mission statement. There are a few things in our goals. If you take a look under, you know, kind of the regional destination piece,
right,
there's a little bit of that in there about tourism promotion and marketing. But how do we incorporate, if we want to at all, the adventure starts here? And I've had a number of community members who look at this and think it's for outsiders coming in, right? That's how we're attracting people to come into our community as visitors. But I would argue too, and I think I put this in my materials, is I think the adventure starts here could also be used for people who actually live here, right? It's that your adventure, your personal adventure begins in Monroe. And maybe that's one way to begin to reimagine the adventure starts here, is it's not for other people, it's for us. And, you know, if we're gonna look at it from that perspective, how do we bring that into our vision and mission statement? And I think Liz raised a really great point, and that's the reason for this slide, is I think it does need to be articulated, or we need to drop the tagline altogether, because we're not currently focused on it, outside of just a little bit of tourism promotion and marketing. So I'm interested in hearing the other council members or staff, you know, what your thoughts are around how to incorporate the tagline, if at all.
I love the, I was stepped out to use the restroom, so I missed the beginning part, but I love the way you're tying it in. It's not just for tourism, but come to Monroe because it's adventuresome, you know, and you can do all sorts of things. I love how you are suggesting or bringing up the fact of, for Monroe residents, the adventure starts here. Like, I like how you're tying that in. I think it's always been just tourism, tourism, tourism. And so to present it in a way to our residents, like, this is it. This is your town, adventure, your life, your adventures starting here, and where it's going to take you, and what you're going to succeed and achieve in life, and raise your family with these views and this family-friendly type atmosphere that we have, that we've been continuing to cultivate. I think we just need to market it that way.
I want to add to that that for someone living here, I mean, through the years, I think we all can agree, you know, you're spending your time here more than you did in the past, as far as for shopping, or for restaurants, for entertainment, you know, hikes, you know, events, that sort of thing. You know, just think back, you know, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, and compare that to today. So, yeah, it is important, I think, for Monroe residents as well, that they have more adventures and it's continuing on that track.
I was hoping you were going to go that route, because the venture starts here. The instant that pops in my head was live, work, and play, right? Because when we've only been looking at the play side of it, the
right.
I agree with that. You know, it's almost like your adventure starts here, and it could be whatever that is. And you know, for our family, it was being able to buy a first-time house, which is a big start of an adventure, right? Being able to afford a house out here, because you can't afford one in Seattle, and you move out here. Raising your kids out here, maybe grandparents coming back here, and their adventure starts because they're close to grandkids. So I think that's a great point. And I always felt like the adventure starts here was kind of like this separate thing. So I think that you're right. We either have to bring it into ultimately what our vision is for this community, which encompasses a lot of residents, or we'd have to not use it if it doesn't fit in. But I think we could possibly make it fit in.
So I'm just curious. Yeah. If you said your adventure starts here instead of the adventure starts here, would that incorporate the idea that you guys are talking about?
I'm
not saying you're going to have to do that. But if we were to say something like that, your adventure starts here, it's more inclusive to the people who are in the city.
Yeah.
As opposed to, and in addition to the people who either choose to visit or the people who choose to move here.
It personalizes and makes it unique to them, so whatever their adventure is. And, you know, I was always one who kind of fought against that Monroe was going to be this huge destination place. Because but I think Monroe is and can be the best place to raise a family, like bar none, you know, to come here and be close, to be able to work either in the community or outside, but to raise your family in good schools, safe community, services, definitely could be a regional shopping destination. But I, you know, excluding the fairgrounds where people come and stay and have a lot of events at the fairgrounds, tourism is kind of all around us, but not necessarily, people aren't spending their vacation time in Monroe.
Right.
And maybe the Wakeboard Park could have brought more of that in, maybe not. But I think Monroe is definitely a regional shopping destination where people come in to shop. But I think, you know, it's a wonderful, wonderful family environment to raise a family. You know, our family feels so fortunate that we came out here and bought a house out here and raised our family. So I think that's something, as we're looking at what has been important to people. You know, lots of people have moved out here for that reason, to afford a house and raise their family.
And raising a family is an adventure.
It is. big.
More so every day.
Yeah.
Some of the things that run through my mind when I think about our community, we're very different than a lot of other communities. We have cities, like we were talking about before, that are plastered up against one another. You can have that Friday night lights kind of thing here because you've got the high school here, right? There's a strong compassion in our community. There's a strong network of people that work together in this community. There's a strong sense of identity in this community. And one of the things that I heard a while ago was that the adventure starts here does seem to be something that relates to people outside the community. I had a resident ask me, you know, why do we have this? Because we live here and it doesn't speak to me. But, you know, the reasons why I think a lot of us moved here was for opportunity. It was because the community was connected, both internally and also on the road network to be able to get to work. I think that we stayed here because it is diverse. What I mean by diverse is not just culturally, but also in terms of opportunity, you know, being able to go and go do any number of things here in town in terms of recreation, but also having quick access to go up to Stevens Pass and to go to Eastern Washington and to go to the city. I like living here because we're in the middle of a lot of opportunity to go do things. So, yeah, some of the things that run through my head, regional, we're talking about how people come shopping here.
Mm-hmm.
you know, when I think about vision, one of the things that I'd like to see is sort of a regional component to it, where we are a place that people come to, but also where we as elected officials, staff and appointed officials are working on a regional level to try to leverage things and whatnot. So some of the things that are coming to mind right now are compassion, regional, connected, opportunity, diverse, and then re/create, like recreate/recreate. I just a lot of different things kick around, and when I come back to the adventure starts here, and I ask myself the question, is that the right slogan? But yeah, I think your adventure and maybe taking out starts and just saying is here, you know, is another way to look at it, so that it's not just about starting, but it's about being here. So those are some of my thoughts. What other thoughts?
Good. I'll just add also, you know, Ben, I've mentioned this to you, that the regional trail, water trail, and land trail based, you know, that's our county has been meeting regularly and really working hard to identify and realize like what is drawing people here, is that we are looked at from outside of Monroe. We are looked at as the regional draw of East County. So, you know, just think about it.
Yeah.
But east of us
and south of us.
West of us and north and south of us.
Yeah,
we're the East County
south.
Draw. So.
Mm-hmm.
And I do want to add to that too. I know that we don't always think about it because we seem to affiliate with Snohomish County, but we have a lot of people that come here from south also. You take a look at a number of the staff members here, and there are a number of staff members that have lived south of Monroe. So we have this affiliation because we're in Snohomish County with East County, Highway 2, but we're at the confluence of two valleys, and we have people from Duval and southward that come up here to work, that come up to the medical centers and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So I think it's important that we think outside of just one valley and think of the fact we're at the intersection of two valleys, not just Highway 2.
Anybody else?
I think Ms. Hassard has something.
I was going to say, I wrote down call on Becky.
Preface this because, yeah, I moved here 2 years ago, and a lot of my family are like, you're moving out to the sticks, you know? And I'm like, no, it's a beautiful community. I tell people when they ask me, you know, like, I've got one friend that's currently looking for a house, and I encourage her and her husband to come look in Monroe, because I tell them, it's such a unique place. I mean, the perfect example was my first summer here. Saturday night, I'm at the summer showdown at the track, you know, watching NASCAR, and then Sunday I'm watching Shakespeare in the Park. Tell me where else you can do that, you know? And it's a lot of the similar crowds. So as I've been listening to all this and thinking about my own experience of moving here, you know, I'm just jotting words down, but like, if you wanted something that was more aspirational, this is what I wrote down. We envision a multi-generational family atmosphere that encourages and embraces its rural and metropolitan duality, a community that supports life and recreational adventure. Just kind of thinking about if you wanted something that was aspirational, that really grabs onto, and it was something that I realized it without being able to name it until Deborah named it. You're right, this is a community where the kids are moving back to. You don't hear them talk about, you know, as soon as I can, I'm getting out of here and moving to the big city, or, you know, so it really is, you've got multiple generations living here. And again, going back to my own case, I don't have children, but I have aging parents, and every time they come up here, they fall more and more in love with all of our walking paths, mm-hmm. and just the sense of family, and you see, mm-hmm. see people out on the streets talking to each other, you know, as they're strolling on a summer day, and I think a lot of that is getting lost in our society now, and you can still find that here, and yet we're close enough, you know, our conversation before this started, we're close enough we can still go to the symphony or the ballet or, you know, go see Shakespeare, and you're not losing that piece of it, so I think I'm starting to get off track here a little bit, because I do, I get passionate about talking about living here, and those are the reasons that I love living here, so.
Well, I love the multi-generational, I love the duality of the rural and the kind of, you know, yeah, because that is the best of both. You know, you want to live in a community that has that kind of sense of small town where you know your neighbors, and you still have access to services. I mean, medical, shopping, movie theater, all that stuff. So I think,
My joke, but there's a lot of truth behind it, is I can go to Fred Meyer's and have a stranger wave at me and they're using all their fingers. You know, so that's nice.
Rather than just the
one. Yeah. I'm from T-Town.
Yeah.
what demographic are you referring to when you want to say something like the adventure starts here or your adventure starts here? And I say that because I don't want to lose track of the older people in this community that don't like what they see as opposed to what they grew up with. And I'm not sure you're going to change that, but I'm just telling you that there's another perception out there, and it comes to do with garbage here and garbage there and business or too busy here and too busy there. Maybe you'll never make those people happy because they remember what their role was 20 years ago. But they are out there. And they have a feeling about their community, Monroe, too. So we have to be just cognizant of that demographic that is still lives in Monroe.
I think that's a perfect segue into the next slide, which is what direction does council want to go on your core values, mission, and vision statement. I don't know that these are the only options, but these are the options that I at least kind of walk through in my own mind that council could consider. Obviously, the first option is the do-nothing option. So we frame this around the idea of updating the vision statement in order to kind of prep ourselves for the update to the comprehensive plan. So we have to update the comprehensive plan every 8 years. The last update was in 2015. The next one is due in 2023. And for the last update in 2015, there was, you know, a significant amount of effort. I think Councilmember Cutterback mentioned it, and maybe others did too, about the intent was to ensure that we had a comprehensive plan that was written in simple language. The average citizen could pick it up and they could read it and understand it. So I think that you've accomplished that goal. Mm-hmm. And I imagine that the next update is really just going to be about just going through and kind of fine-tuning it to accommodate the new population and employment data. However, you are still going to want to have some analysis or some review or some check-in on the vision statement. And you could start that vision statement work now and begin kind of prepping yourselves for when that comprehensive plan update has to begin in about 2020, 2021. So remember, comprehensive plans require a lot of technical effort on the background in order to take your new population allocations and your new employment numbers and then make sure that everything is consistent across the plans. You have to take a look at your water system plan and your general sewer plan. Typically, you have to hire consultants to come in and do that. You could focus on that technical work if you chose to go ahead and update your comprehensive, went ahead and updated your vision now. But you could choose to do nothing and wait until 2020 and take a look at it then. The second option that I outlined is really kind of a mayor and council lead, which is you take, with some facilitation, go through and adopt a set of core values. Just review your previous mission, vision, and value statements with your new core values and update as needed, and then kind of roll those out to staff, boards and commissions, and community stakeholders. So it's really you and the mayor are driving this process, and you kind of make the decisions, kind of a top-down approach. I phrase that as being kind of the low effort. I think we could potentially get that done in 3 council meetings. I think you should have 1 joint meeting with your boards and commissions, especially if you're rolling this out, and then 1 larger community meeting to talk about how did you come up with these values, get input from members of the public and other stakeholders, and then proceed to decide whether or not you want to adopt something around in June. The third option is to kind of outsource that work and start with your planning commission. Your planning commission is supposed to be or choke. I think I'm good. Thanks. You could assign your planning commission with the work. Your planning commission is responsible for updating your comprehensive plan. Your vision statement is in your comp plan, so you can have your planning commission go through an exercise of core values, and then, you know, come back and talk to the city council about it, and then invite input from city staff, boards and commissions, and others. That's kind of the medium effort. So you're really saying to your planning commission, take 3 or 4 meetings, then you have a joint meeting with planning commission, 1 community meeting, and then 2 council meetings.
Do you foresee in that scenario that they would have a facilitator helping planning commission go through the core values exercise, or that's on their own with staff direction?
I think it depends. I think you could do it either with a facilitator, or you could potentially do it with staff.
Okay.
Most of the review work that I did around establishing core values, the group recommended that you hire a facilitator, but I think that's mostly because it was written by facilitators. trying to drum up business.
Yeah.
So I'm not certain. I think you'd have to give some thought to whether or not you wanted to bring somebody in from the outside to help you do that work.
Okay.
I would throw out there the staff time too, right?
Yeah.
So if they're working on this, they're not working on other things,
sure,
that we might be needing. So that would be the other thing from an implementation standpoint. What's the impact to Deborah's time? What's the impact to Ben Swanson's time if it's planning commission and everything?
Definitely.
Yeah, remember, it starts with mayor and council adopting those set of core values.
Yeah.
Because I think really everything else needs to be driven from where council and mayor are around what are the community core values, right? And how do you want to align those core values with your vision and mission statement? And so I don't think you could ask your planning commission to come up with a set of core values,
right,
for community, because you may end up in conflict. I always like to describe planning commissions as being an inch wide and a mile deep, and councils being a mile wide and an inch deep, right? I mean, your span really covers the gamut of everything, whereas planning commissions are pretty focused on the comprehensive plan. Finally, the last one is kind of the highest level of effort, and that's a community-driven exercise. And I don't know, did anybody here go through the exercise with the school district? Because in the Economic Development Ad Hoc Committee, Katie Woods was a part of that group, and I also spoke with Darcy Chessman, and they took the school district went through a facilitator-driven kind of core values exercise, and that resulted in a mission and vision statement that ultimately produced the remodels for the bond that passed, and then the remodels for all of the schools. So I think that's a really good local example of a kind of core values exercise, mission and vision statement that actually, you know, ended up producing something of significance for the community.
Mm-hmm.
So, the school district provided us with a copy of the scope of work that they did with their facilitator. And when we got the cost estimate for that work for us, theirs was done in 2015. 3 years later, we're looking at about $35,000 to go through that exercise with a facilitator. And we had a couple of quotes around the $35,000 mark, and a couple that came in around 10. So depending again on how much work you want staff to do and how much work council wants to do, still if you're looking at, you know, 2 community meetings, a joint meeting, and 3 council meetings that are facilitated, you're about in that, you know, $25,000 range. But you do, I think, get a mission, vision, core values that is really inclusive of all your community members, that you really feel like it is a, you know, kind of both a top-down and a bottom-up approach.
The way that you have that structured, the 2 community meetings, there's an effort to, more of an effort to bring people in from the community to talk about what their thoughts are and their hopes and their aspirations.
Are you done? I had a question with that. So what is staff recommendations? Or mayor's recommendations, or your recommendations?
My recommendations, I think it's important to engage the community. I think the bottom two sound like good ways to go. I feel the same way that Deborah does, just that the Planning Commission focuses very much on land use and whatnot, and so relying more heavily on the Planning Commission with three Planning Commission meetings, I would just acknowledge that their focus tends to be very planning oriented. I think I'd like to hear more from the community. For me, it's just a matter of balancing what other, it's a funding issue, right? If we could afford it, I would go with the last one. So if the council agreed with the budget decision, I would go with the last one of those.
Staff?
I think my preference would be to have a facilitator. I think that, again, it depends upon the level of involvement and engagement that you want with your community. I think having the assistance of somebody who's been through this before and has been successful in it, I think is going to be really helpful in ensuring that we have an outcome that people don't roll their eyes at or feel like, wow, that was a lot of effort, but we didn't really get what we wanted. And I think with a facilitator, we'll probably have a better chance of coming out with something that really is, I think, both grounded in authenticity and at the same time is embraced by the community.
Well, I would agree with number four. It's just a budget decision. I've been through a couple of strategic planning processes at work, and you know, it's not easy, and so it's important we get as much input, and I think it's really important to get the stakeholder-driven process to get the community involved, because we really shouldn't be, you know, talking about core values for the community without hearing from them. I mean, we represent them, I get that, right? So, but I think it's really important that we do that together with them. It's not a top-down approach, it's a community approach. It kind of comes up instead of officials driving it down. So, and you get what you pay for. Knowing staff time, you know, could be an issue too with this. Again, it's not an easy process, and if you have a really great facilitator, we will get a really great product.
Can I throw in just an observation? It's hard to get people to show up for community meetings, but the people who are in this room are arguably probably some of the most influential in the community. I mean, I know who most of you are outside of council just because I know of your name or your family's name because you're involved in the community. Perhaps a consultant would be better served in going to some selected influential people in our community and talking to them, not necessarily council members, but maybe the people that the council members are interacting with on a regular basis that are representative of larger community stakeholder groups. Just a thought. It's hard to get people to show up. It's pretty easy to go see somebody, right?
Go to them instead of have them come.
Exactly, because if they matter to a large congregation or a large group or a community organization, they're going to be speaking for a number of people. Just a thought.
And kind of furthering what Jacob just mentioned is just from some recent experiences we had with the master planning for the parks process, the pop-up studio at Lake Tai, and there was another pop-up studio over at Sky River Park at the Poison Hills Club. That was another, draw people. It just made it more convenient for folks to just stop by and that. And it might, you know, with a consultant to kind of draw the price up a little bit, but, you know, we can work with that staff, you know, as far as that kind of stuff. And then, yes, exactly, I was going to get to that too, is the night out with the fields concept and, you know, just a, you know, you've got a captured audience, a nice cross section of the families of our community to come out.
And I think, again, along the same lines, thinking about the constituency you were mentioning earlier that maybe don't want change. Sometimes they're not going to be as comfortable coming to a bigger community meeting. They feel like they're going to get drowned out or not heard versus going to them to get their input. You know, when you want to make sure everybody's being heard, might be a better way to go. From a finance standpoint, you know me, I'm trying to keep us within resources, but
I don't know what's more important than knowing where we want to go.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, that's the kind of thing then that will drive what we're going to do with our finances over the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years. You know, so it gets back to what you were saying, you get what you pay for.
Yeah.
You know, spend a little up front will save you tons in the long run.
Yeah.
So, you know, if it's a priority, then you make it a priority and we'll figure it out.
I think what Patsy said and what you've said and some other people on the table, if you want the community to swallow it, you might want to have them in on it. Otherwise, it's like feeding the little chick, take this, instead of saying, you were part of this, here's where we are. Now, along with what you said, you might have a hard time identifying in the older group who you're going to go talk to. But some of them run businesses around here, have been around here when there was one signal light in town and one scale and the Candy Cane restaurant. And they still run businesses. Some of them are real estate, some of them are some other things. But you might have to sit down and do a real comprehensive check on who those people you would, you know, you'd like to hear from. But I think as we go forward, I think that option number four is a good idea within the constraints of money, but still, it's the same thing you said. If you want them to swallow it, make them part of the process.
Jason, Jim? Haven't heard from you two. What do you think? 1, 2, 3, or 4?
I'll share if you guys are ready.
Yeah, go ahead.
So, number two option still includes the community. So I guess I'm trying to wrap my head around, like, I don't, when I look at all this, I don't know that we're that far off. I think we're pretty close. We just need to fine tune it, dial it in, get some specifics listed. And I'm not trying to minimize, like, oh, we can get this done in a weekend. I'm just saying, I think, you know, I look at all these visions and the core statement and all that. I think we are, like, really close. So if we could do number two and include community input, it wouldn't mean that we'd have to just do on a Tuesday night, come share, because we're going to talk about it. We could still do number two, but also include some pop-up boards down at the parks or at different events, and not inundate the planning commission, who's already busy enough with additional work, and go to the expense of the facilitator and all that. I don't know. I'm not like set one way or another, but I just. Yes, we should have community input, but I think number two is like a great spot. But that's my
So you're kind of, I just know the last time we went through the comprehensive plan, we've already got on your 2020 to 2022. It's a multi-year faceted approach. We had a consultant last time. I'm assuming we're going to have a consultant this time, correct? We budgeted or even thought about
You
that?
Mean for the comp plan?
Yes.
That's a good question. It's going to be less of an effort than this last time because we rewrote the comp plan.
Okay.
I'm thinking it's probably going to be mostly technical staff, so it'll be specific consultants to assist with the housing element and the land use element, just crunching the numbers for us and providing us new tables and new information. Same thing with the update to, I don't know about the economic development plan. We did a major update to the transportation element, so we'll probably have to hire somebody again because we'll have new population and new employment numbers, so you'll need to bring on a transportation planner. So I don't see us having one kind of overarching consultant to do, you know, kind of the management of the process. I think we're going to manage it in-house and then just hire those experts that we need individually.
Because I don't see them as mutually exclusive. I mean, it's all part of the process, right? When we're doing a visioning exercise, it's a part of the, you know, like you're saying, waiting until we do the comp plan. I mean, I'm still afraid.
thinking. I was like, well, if we want to cast the widest net for gathering the information and soliciting input from the community, what better way than to take a full calendar year of all the interactions that we have with the community, all of the ones we've talked about, where it's just a constant drumbeat of marketing deal in 2019 with the vision, which is Vision 2020. You know, in 2020, we're going to be setting the vision, we're going to be setting the goals for 2050, right? Vision 2020, you get the plan works, right? And we use this whole year as our connection with the community and taking that data into Vision 2020, where then we get it right. We do all of the goals and all that kind of stuff. But we use a whole year to do it, all the different interactions, because it's January for another day. We have all the seasons to go through, all the different things that people enjoy, and we figure out a way to capture the feedback throughout the year so that we can get it all for 2020. For just what's written on the paper, number four, but I don't think we should limit ourselves to four options. That's the way I look at it. I don't think it's just four options.
Well, just from what you said, I think if we wanted a slightly less perfect project, we have Vision 2030. But I got your plan.
That was cute.
You need
a rim shot right there.
There you go. I like the idea of taking a year and just collecting the information. The problem I see when you have something that's kind of short term is the same X number of people show up. So you get the same kind of opinion, and it's a point in time. And again, there are only a certain number of people who really get involved in the community. But as I was looking at the Planning Commission assignment as part of this 2020 idea, we have other commissions. I mean, this is a multifaceted thing. And so we have other commissions that are looking at economics, Planning Commission for land use, and I'm sure parks. Get a representative from each one of these commissions and start them moving in that kind of direction. And then in 2020 or whenever the appropriate time is, we pull in the facilitator. Hopefully we'll have enough interest that we can get a couple of at least, well, maybe two, focused groups that will include as many people. People will come to something once, and then they'll kind of drift off, and we'll end up with a normal crowd. I think something like that would work. I think it incorporates Jason's ideas, and it goes along with Kevin's. And eventually, we're probably going to end up going with number four, but I think that gives us a better run-up and a lot more information that the facilitator can use in a year, as opposed to having something just in 2019. That's my thought.
So when does the staff start on the process? Are they starting in 2020?
For the
the elements of the comp plan?
For the comprehensive plan
update?
We'll probably start to take a look at the end of this year of how long it's going to take to adopt various get through the various sections. The challenge that we have is that we're not going to know the population allocations and the employment numbers until the end of 2020.
Okay.
So it's really a 2021, 2022 when the heavy lifting is going to get done. And then I think it has to be adopted by June of 2023.
Well, the reason why I asked that is what you were saying before is that like the economic development or the advisory board had a tough time coming up with stuff because we didn't have a clear vision or mission. So I think as we go into the comp plan, into the heavy lifting part, I think it would be great to have the mission vision set or have done that work, and then we start on the technical task goals piece of it, which the staff is going to be doing with experts. So as long as it fits in that timeline, I think, because I think that will help them, as Becky said before, it helps prioritize stuff. You've got a clear vision, you've got a mission, as you start to set some of the other things, it'll prioritize, you know, what are we doing? And it might have some stuff go away, right?
Okay.
Do summarize?
Yes, summarize it.
Sure, so here's a thought for you then. It sounds like there is an interest in having a longer lead up, right, and involving more community. I like the idea of the focus groups, because I agree. I think speaking with focus groups first and then moving on to the larger community and getting input will provide us with, I think, a deeper sense of where we're at. It'll also, I think, tap in then to members of the community that may or may not usually participate, and we'll get more voices. It does sound like that there's an interest in having a facilitator kind of assist with this. I like the idea of the pop-up studios too, and taking a longer term. One thing that struck me, and I don't know if anybody else in the room thought about this either, we are in an election year this year, and so we may, I don't know what that looks like, but rolling into 2020, there may be some new faces around the table potentially. And so, you know, one of the questions is, what do we do with the new representation that we may have? Do those people want to participate in that process, right? Mm-hmm. And so maybe we would be better served if we make it a budget priority for 2020 and say we're really going to plan in the fall of this year, 2019, and come back to you with kind of a full-on, here's what we think the whole plan looks like. Mm-hmm. We'll have cost estimates then at that time to say, here's what we think a facilitator will seem like, and then we could just incorporate it into the 2020 budget. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. I like that.
Yeah. Yep.
So we'll just stay where we're at for this year, knowing that it's going to be something that we're going to incorporate into the budget for 2020. And then we'll just add that and incorporate it into the six-year strategic plan. So it'll be on your plan that we're going to do that update. And that'll start to signal to people. And we can then notice boards and commissions and others that all this work is starting to come, and people can begin to think about it.
And then you are doing the vision in 2020.
Right. You will have vision 2020. I can already see the glasses, you know.
Well, the other thing, though, is that if you can, it's important when you're doing something like this, that's why we use it where I'm at, is that you got to market it to where people recognize it, so they will show up. They know what it means. So if you can get something catchy that people, I keep hearing this type of deal, it works. It's not just a gimmick.
In the meantime, if we can plan to do the pop-up things throughout this year, so that we have the data for the facilitator come next year.
You want to still try and do that if you're going to try and do that this year with the pop-up studios, then I would suggest we put some money or use some money in this year's budget then to start that process, because those pop-up studios, we're going to need to figure out who's going to man them, how are we going to collect data, where are they going to be, and it'll be, you know, heavily done during the summer months.
Mm-hmm.
So we just want to make sure that we've got somebody on board to do that. So that would be happening then kind of in the middle of the year and taking data.
And if I may, part of it would be, what questions should we ask?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We want to make sure we're asking the right questions so it's usable data for whomever it is that's going to work with us with that.
So does the facilitator come first or the pop-up studios?
Yeah, I would say it may not necessarily be the same person, but I do think we need somebody to assist us with, you know, putting together that, what are the questions, when are they going to be, how are we going to manage them, who's going to collect, because I think that's what made the pop-up studios for the master plan so successful. I mean, I went to both of them, and, you know, they had the booth and the nice, you know, materials all printed out, and I think we're going to need that kind of assistance to pull something off that really looks professional, because I think that's our intent, right, is to capture people's attention. So that would be something different. We would be coming back to you then with, you know, some sort of kind of early phase in, with the heavy lifting then happening maybe this time next year, right, where you're a little bit more indoors, and so the community meetings are happening at that time after you've collected the data in kind of the late fall before everybody kind of shuts down. So I'm thinking, I don't know, when your parks, August, September kind of time frame?
Yeah. And I was going to mention too that if the vision is 2020, that's just funny. That concurrently will be working well with the park plan update. It's on the six-year plan, is that 2020, we want to begin to initiate that, because we need to have the park plan update adopted by the end of 2021. so then we're eligible for grants. So every 6 years it has to occur, so that's, it's on there. So anyways, what my point is that as the park plan update is going on, as they can check in, you know, with the visioning, or the vision process. So to, you know, relate to it. So just, here's the park plan update, oh, now we have this. And, yeah, they kind of match, I guess.
So we see it as a two-phase contract, then phase one being kind of the initial community outreach, the focus groups, and then the second phase being coming back and working with council then on updating the core values, the mission and vision statements kind of in the first and second quarters of next year and having something adopted, you know, again by April, May-ish of next year. So it kind of runs through two budget cycles, the 2019 and the 2020.
I like that. That kind of goes with what Jason was suggesting.
So we're talking about basically a contract that spans two budget years then. 2019 and 2020.
Okay.
Okay.
Yep.
Darn, if only we had it.
I didn't know that you just enough this year to get it going.
Yeah.
To do the pop-up groups this
yep.
summer.
Yep.
So that we can come back with real data with whichever council members are here and make decisions.
Yep.
Okay.
All right. Anybody disagree with that direction? Okay. We'll proceed like that.
Great, thank you very much.
All right, next item, discussion item number two. This is AB19-019, Monroe Municipal Campus Plan. Jake, is that this one?
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, does anybody want a break?
Go.
Okay, we will take a 5-minute break. we will recess until 7. So we'll start up again in 8 minutes at 7 o'clock.
I have to leave at 7.
Okay.
Get a quick cat now.
We're gonna go ahead and get started.
Just for the recording, Councilmember Hanford had to leave at 7. Time right now is just after 7 o'clock. It's about 7:01, 7:02, and we're gonna go ahead and continue with discussion item number two, AB19-019 Monroe Municipal Campus Plan, final phase project charter. Jacob.
Thank you. Okay, do over. Here we go again.
Okay.
Municipal campus plan, final phase. So the campus plan came out in 2008. The council has seen the campus plan at various points during, actually, I think all of your time on council, and should be relatively familiar with this. If I get no looks of confusion, okay, we're moving on. You guys are relatively familiar with it. So the purpose of discussion tonight is to review the project charter scope for both the facility assessment component, which will be done by a consultant, and then also the P4 committee process, which will be done by the P4 committee. This is a sub-project of the final stage of the 2008 campus plan. So does anyone not know what a project charter is?
I learned about it in my lean class.
Okay, well there you go. Then gold star.
What'd you call it?
A project charter. I think of it as a project narrative, I think would be another way to put it that people might be a little more familiar with.
Mission.
What's that?
No,
we're way out of the clouds here. We're back down to tangible stuff. Okay. So thank you, Becky. Sort of. The project charter document in this case is going to define what the project will include. It should clarify what the project scope is. We're going to talk about that tonight. And then it should also set expectations for outcomes and deliverables, right? Does that make sense? Good enough. Let's move into it. Background. The municipal campus plan was obviously completed in 2008. That's why it's called the 08 plan. Over the last 11 or so years, the council has funded 6 of the 7 major projects that were included in the plan. So I could bore you by listing all of those. However, I will say that the continued commitment to funding this plan and moving it forward is very much appreciated by staff and also the general public. I know that the new chief doesn't realize this, but at one point in time, there were hydro seeders filling up where his patrol cars now park. And that was still the entrance to the building. So we had some major conflicts going on as a growing community, and we've resolved a lot of those with council support as we've moved forward. So, like I say, as we've moved forward, though, our environment has changed a little bit. We've brought on some new services at the city, specifically the municipal court, and also the overall environment of the economy and construction has changed quite a bit. So when the plan was written, it was considered pretty reasonable to have a combined municipal facility for both police and city which would have been quite large, somewhere in the neighborhood of about 40,000 square feet. However, looking at that through today's lens, the cost of new construction is roughly 2 to 3 times what refurbishing what we already have might be if we chose to go that route. So looking at what the plan laid out and then looking at what our realistic options are right now, we thought that it would be good to come forward with a facility assessment project this year, and then also to look at some of the things we've considered in the past on the P4 committee to assess where we really sit, since it's been 11 years and this is the biggest bite of the apple for the entire plan. So other things that have happened in the last 11 years, environmental rules have changed quite a bit. Infiltrating stormwater from a new facility is pretty challenging. It would take up a lot of ground in our 7-acre campus. City Hall has been remodeled, I don't know, probably 30 times. But it's got an inefficient layout. It's become more of a prevalent problem customer interface-wise. A lot of conflict with the way the court needs to interact with their clientele, the way that we need to interact with our folks that are coming in for permitting, land use, building permits, and then also code enforcement, which has kind of been a more of a hot issue of late. Not really having that space to have that good customer interaction has been a problem. Another one, the police locker room is, I don't know how to put this politically correctly, but it's unigender, I guess, would be the right way to say it. So it's a shared space, and it frankly, it's kind of awkward, right, Chief?
Well, I've been in the Navy before, so Master Chief can attest it doesn't bother us. I would imagine it bothers the majority.
Yeah, so, yeah.
So it's an uncomfortable situation.
Yeah, and then also the police facilities used more frequently for community trainings and also large-scale SWAT operations. So when they've got a large-scale community response in Monroe SWAT operation going on, the public works and parks area is filled up with black trucks with people jumping out with guns. The interface is difficult. So we have a bit of a parking problem, which kind of leads me into, we also have a public parking problem. And when we have court, there's occasions where employees I've run into have been quite frustrated, and that might have been vented out on me, and maybe justifiably so, since that's part of the stuff that's under the public works purview, but they have to park over at Frank Wagner Elementary and walk over to work because we've got so many people visiting our court that we're at capacity. So that's a reality of where we're at right now. So moving forward, because of the change conditions, council approved a facility assessment, which is the consultant component of this project, in 2019. Budget is $72,000, and the scope is in the project charter, which is here with you if you guys want to take a look at it. First page of the charter, project scope part A. So this is where I'd be looking for feedback, additional things, remove things, or other comments from council. Essentially, I'll run you through outside tasks and deliverables. So the task description is evaluate the conceptual feasibility of new construction of one combined municipal facilities or municipal services building. And then the deliverable would be description of the opportunity and cost with a conceptual layout plan. So essentially, what are we in for, and what options do we have? The next task would be to determine the near-term maintenance needs of our existing building. So we have some failure points in our existing building. It's about 60 years old. It's at that age where some of the stuff that's underneath the slab needs to be replaced. Our electrical facilities and also our data capability as far as technology goes. We've been running into some issues there. So that would be a description of those deficiencies. What are they, and what's the cost to correct? Then we move down kind of to the next phase, which would be near-term opportunities to create efficiencies within existing buildings. So that, again, description of deficiencies and then cost of improvement. So how do we make it better, not just maintain it to be workable, but actually improve what we have. And then the last one would be evaluating repurposing the existing municipal campus buildings that we have based on a 50-year service life expectancy. That would include the now vacant shop space that is, and also the adjacent Sallyport and also the adjacent shop to that. Works out to be about 6,000 square feet as a single story. Could potentially be two stories, which would essentially double that. So it could be 12,000 square feet available there, depending on what the reality is of doing that. So from there, from the consultant, we would again get a conceptual layout and probable cost of construction. Yes?
Jacob, do you know what the approximate square footage is of each building now?
I do, yeah. You want me to just reel them off?
Well,
I mean, I can.
Okay.
Yeah, City Hall is about 9,800 square feet, and the police department, actually, sorry, City Hall is about 10,000 square feet, police department is about 9,300 square feet. And that's That's close. That's within a few hundred one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
So any comments, thoughts, questions, things that we need to consider that we're not?
So part A is about City Hall, not about the police department, or is it both?
Part A really, it's mostly about City Hall, but it also addresses some of the things that I touched on with police. So we need to look at, I think, our campus as a whole, and so we don't want to parcel out one building. City Hall has some different needs, and the police department has some different needs. The police department's needs aren't based necessarily on its age. They're based more on the evolution of a department and how we use the building now as compared to what was once acceptable for our community. And so that's really where we would go in that direction. City Hall is a little bit different, where we're looking at something that was once Collins Chevrolet and isn't anymore. And we've chopped that building up and beat it up pretty well, and it's probably time to start looking at some larger refurbishment and maybe some redesign as far as how we use the space. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Good with you? Yeah.
So in the first task about evaluating the feasibility of new construction of one combined, are you talking about just City Hall there, or are you talking about both?
Talking about both. So that's actually what's in the campus plan.
Right.
And rather than throw that out entirely, I think we should spend a small amount of time with our consultant at least looking at it.
Okay.
We're going to get to the budget a little later, and I think that's when you might have some more comments about whether that's a reality that you want to explore or not. Because when we start looking at those numbers, that's something I think that would be worthwhile to think on a little bit,
right,
or to have some questions about right there as well. But yeah, combined.
Okay.
So
have there been kind of discussions with staff of what the staff needs are? Do you have like collaborative space? Or, I mean, because it'd be hard to do this,
yeah,
without having, you know, kind of knowing what you're kind of looking at to come up with a number of what this is going to cost.
So at this point in time, we haven't gotten into that level of detail. However,
okay,
when we work with our consultant, there will be some detail that surrounds that exactly.
Okay.
Depending on what we want to do. So, to be quite blunt, I think when we get to the numbers, that level of commitment might not be palatable to the council.
Right.
It's just, I mean, it's new construction is very, very expensive right now. We just paid $6 million for a shop. I'm astounded by that. In my head, I think that's a $3 million building, but that's not what the going rate is. The reality of it is, and that it's a pre-engineered metal building. I mean, that's basically...
Yeah.
It's something you would buy to park your boat in at home, except on a grand scale.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Any other thoughts, comments? Okay. So, moving on. Scope Part B. So, because of the need to, the council has discussed before, they need to explore all potential opportunities within the community. Scope B is actually for the P4 committee to handle as a group, and it is listed on the next page. So essentially, the task descriptions, there are two, and then we have some, I included a lessons learned section. Because we've done this informally before, I thought that was relevant information to bring to the table. It doesn't mean that any exploration that the P4 committee does as part of this needs to include that information. However, again, it's something that's come up in the past, it's been discussed, and these are the general responses or information that's been received by the city when they've talked about it previously. So, central task description, evaluate construction of shared facilities with Monroe School District, every community college, and the USPS. Lessons learned from prior informal consideration, funding sources and cycles and capital plans are misaligned. That makes a challenge. Economy of scale is not gained as shared spaces are generally considered to be infeasible. So essentially, sharing that collaborative construction cost results in just a bigger building, not necessarily a crossover in space. So there's no gain in usability through shared square footage. It's a challenge. So it's not something that couldn't be dealt with. However, it's come up. So working in shared spaces with multiple priorities and multiple sources of leadership is logistically challenging. I think that's easily enough understood. And then operational inefficiencies occur in joint use facilities because there are additional staffing demands really needed to manage building logistics and user interests as needed. And then the deliverable from that one there in evaluating construction with shared facilities is really a metric-based recommendation to either enter into an interlocal agreement with another local government or quasi-governmental entity, or to not pursue this option. So the way that we would see this happening is by putting forth some specific things that we want to measure, rating them as a P4 committee, and then doing any outward, staff could do any outward looking work that was required in order to facilitate that. Essentially, what's the value of X, and how do we rate that as far as what level of importance do we want to give it? So, any comments there? No? Very good. Okay, last one, evaluate acquisition of land and or moving into a new and existing building. So the challenges we've come up against in the past with that is purchasing a suitable size and type facility and then remodeling for city and police operations has generally been found to be more costly than remaining at the existing location. So again, refurbish in place, same deliverable as the first task there for the P4 committee. So comments there? Is that worth doing for the P4 committee, I think, is what I'm really looking
for. Yeah,
for
both of these, I just want to make certain that council's on board. You'd like P4 to explore both of these. The resolution that council adopted probably about 6 or 7 years ago expressed an interest in working with the school district to co-locate. So before P4 begins with that, just asking for a confirmation from the members, I guess, at least that are present here today, that that is something that you'd like P4 to work forward on, and then the same thing with acquiring land and the second one. So just looking for feedback.
Based on what you said, it sounds like,
or Kirk?
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I don't have a thing to say.
It's okay. We're informal today. Go for it.
It sounds like what you
said. He's got a hand. I'll buy it.
I'm the new guy at the end of the block. It sounds like you're saying a joint venture with a school district could be more expensive and not really gain anything. In other words, the city needs X, the school district needs Y, and them together are going to cost the same thing as we going out and get X by ourselves. And maybe be a more palatable building than one that houses both. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah.
Okay. And does this, in light of Ms. Chessman, Darcy,
yeah.
Her admonition that she will be leaving the district office and going somewhere else, although she knows not where, how does that affect the school district's thought process and joining us in looking for a joint venture, or does it?
So what you're saying is, how does the school board feel about a joint facility? Is that what
I guess so. She's made an announcement that they're leaving the district office and going somewhere. Although the day I talked to her, she didn't know where something
was. Okay, we're not talking about Darcy leaving the school board. Okay.
City council and the district office being relocated somewhere else and selling the current building and land.
Okay. So I think that even if they're staying or going, you still have the other issues that are on here about misaligning, right, Jacob? You're still dealing with the same issues. Right?
I think the thing that really came up last time and the most prevalent theme that kept coming forth is many of the other agencies would be very happy to be a tenant of the city of Monroe, but that doesn't put the city of Monroe in the best case scenario, since paying for a new facility is going to require bonding of some sort, most likely, and bonding of another sort, most likely, so a couple of different bonds. And then with having a tenant-landlord relationship, there's no guarantee. I mean, and so if the city were to take on all of the risk and the other organizations essentially said, yeah, we'd very much like to move in, but the city owns the risk. Yes,
I understand, and I wouldn't advocate for the city owning the risk and having a tenant. I would only advocate for joint tenancy and joint funding.
Right.
And, you know, in talking to the school district, I also realize that funding for school district buildings comes in a different form and or path, and we would be looking for funding for a city hall. And they might not align, so we could say, give us your 120 and we'll take our 120 and go build it. Because it probably wouldn't come at the same time, and we probably wouldn't know when or if they might get there. So
right.
If that, excuse me. So that's the thought process. I understand that. So just, I don't know what the school district is doing, and I'm not advocating that I care. I'm just saying that to sell a bond to the public might go down better if both entities were being satisfied rather than just City Hall.
And the funding also, there are different types of funding sources too that we'll discuss later. The question right now though would be, so one of the things that I ran into in my first couple years with this was we were trying really hard to get things to work with the school district, and through the process that's where I began to find out how complicated this was, and that we were spending time but there was no interlocal agreement or anything in place that held the parties to a standard. Other thoughts? I think Jim had his hand up.
Yeah.
Yes, please. I just wanted to mention that, as we've discussed in the past, working with trying to coordinate funding sources between the school district, Everett Community College, the city, tax bonds, et cetera, just became more and more of a nightmare. Even though I think one of the best things the city can do is move the City Hall closer to downtown. In terms of P4 looking at this, I think we have really looked at the whole shared facility construction thing to death, and I don't see it as a starter.
Okay.
Acquisition of land, again, depending on where, and my choice would first be someplace downtown, is probably going to be the best option for a new City Hall.
Where might that be, Jim?
That big old school building would be the best place that I could see it if they tore it down and rebuilt it. The only thing is, and it came up last time, was the building department and all the heavy equipment, all that stuff, and having the police department and the building department, and I apologize if I don't know what you guys are called.
Public
people with the big tractors, okay? Staying at the original location and expanding out and taking over, they have three buildings there. Mm-hmm. And then having City Hall proper move to downtown with facilities for possible Everett Community College, training courses, which I think would be a real positive aspect. It would bring more people downtown. I mean, we could look at working with the school district. I really, from past experience, I don't think it's really worth the time to look at it, but let's look at some of the other options if we do buy property.
Okay, so I'm hearing two that are not exactly super on doing the joint facility.
Yeah.
So let's hear from other council members. Patsy?
I think the joint facility would be tough, but there's nothing that would prevent the city from building the building, having a long-term tenant in there who then added to the building cost or to helping pay for the building by making tenant improvements.
Sure.
So you might get $1 million from them to do tenant improvements on their area and then a long-term lease, so you're getting revenue in. But the city owns the building, so it's not a joint venture at that point. So I think that could possibly be one way to go. As far as moving it downtown, I think it is important to look at kind of how our city is growing and expanding and where would be kind of more the center of town. We're expanding north. So while I get being downtown, I mean, we, you know, all the expansion is building is kind of happening north of the town. So looking, if we were to move, looking at that first, not just, you know, we'd have to go, okay, what is the best location to serve the most residents, people, what makes sense? I do agree it'd be hard to find that section of land. We looked at Kelsey at one time, if you remember, there's vacant land up there.
We own it.
Yeah, and we own it, and we've had discussions about that, because then you give up the taxable sales revenue, but then we have money down, I mean, we have land downtown that we would sell and try to get some revenue out of that. So, not suggesting we do that, but it was considered at one point.
Right.
I think some of those conversations are going to be tempered by budget. So what we did put together for this agenda bill was a discussion about budget. And as Jacob mentioned earlier, renovating the existing space comes
right.
at a significantly lower cost than building new. And so I think go ahead and move on.
Okay.
Let's talk about the items that are on the top of page 4 of 4.
Okay. Right. Real quick, so I'm understanding consensus on the first row. Jason, your thoughts on working with the school district with the first row, with having Public Works look into that?
I'm indifferent, to be honest with you.
Okay.
I think I'm just that we need to do what makes the most sense for us, the city.
Okay,
yeah.
So not necessarily working with the school district.
Yeah.
Can if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't.
So okay. So what I my take here. My takeaway. Okay. I think I'm hearing 4 council members say that Public Works Committee does not need to look at the first row, which is evaluate construction of shared facilities. Is that correct?
I would agree with that.
I don't necessarily agree with that because I don't know about the post office.
It will never happen.
Oh, really? Okay, because to me that would make
I've tried that in 2 other
jurisdictions.
It would never happen.
Because that post office needs serious, and it makes sense to do that, but if you're saying it's just not even negotiable, like it's just
dealing with the Postal Service and the feds trying to do something that's joint.
I'm just talking about they could become a long-term tenant.
No. Okay, then Jason and...
Who's on the people committee? Do we have representation here?
I think I'm on.
Yeah, Jim is.
Am I the chair?
Yeah,
yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, Jeff and Ed are both. I just want to make certain that coming away from this meeting, if all they're going to do is look at row number 2, you know, that we at least know that we're not dealing with row 1. Right now, I think I'm hearing all council members present saying that it's okay for the committee just to not focus on row 1, and then we're going to continue, I think, talking about numbers, which is where Deborah was moving us.
Right, but what I'm adding is I'm indifferent, so if the P4 committee feels like...
Oh, indifferent.
Wanna, yes.
That's what you said.
That's what I said.
Got it.
So
I
if
didn't
the
hear
P4 the committee feels like they want to explore that as an option
in
their committee, I'm fine with it.
Okay. Okay, so just go ahead and update the committee and see where things go. Doesn't sound like there's a majority of, anyway, just sounds like we'll still have a conversation. Yep.
Okay.
Thanks.
Yep, so let's talk turkey. On the last page there, we have the nice colored spreadsheet that Finance Director Hassert corrected my 27 math errors and then added in the other important stuff that you all need to see. So essentially, we tried to put what I would call bookends on this project, and so the bottom of the barrel being about $10 million, the top of the barrel being about $40 million. Think of $40 million as being that brand new 40,000 square foot building, or an acquisition of an existing building that we remodel, or it potentially could go a little higher if we have to acquire land. So it starts to get a little bit, I don't know. Well, it's a lot. Yeah, so and the ways that we would fund these, so our revenue source options would be through bonds that are repaid through REIT 1. And as Becky pointed out to me several times, this is a conservative estimate on what we could essentially get for bonds paid by REIT 1 in a bad year. So essentially we bring in about $250,000 a year in a very down economy and a poor real estate moving, I suppose would be the right way to put it. So it's conservative. So that would be about $4.2 million in bonds, and then the remainder would be through voter-approved just general obligation bonds. So those would be our 2 revenue sources for this project. So that would actually go out to a vote.
I'm a little bit confused. So
sure.
All of this represents a conservative estimate, or you got high-low?
Sorry, the REIT revenue represents a conservative estimate, what we could repay.
Okay.
This is a bookend spreadsheet of cost, but that, as far as from the revenue side, it's conservative. So.
And if I may, real quick, the reason is, so of course we do both first and quarter percent REIT.
Right.
So real estate excise first quarter can be used for general civic buildings, community centers, city halls, police stations.
Okay.
REIT 2 cannot be used for that. Just like REIT 1 can be used for park land acquisition, but REIT 2 cannot. So that's why we focused on REIT 1. And then what I did is I went back and looked at our recession years to see what was the lowest amount that came in the recession year, and that was just a little around $250,000 for REIT 1. So then we talked to our bond underwriter and said, okay, if I have $250,000 a year for debt service, how much debt can I get for that for a 40-year term? And he said, right now in today's market, you can comfortably get $4.25 million. Okay? So that's where that first $4.25 million comes from. Now, the caution I give on that, though, then that means that what you are doing is you are dedicating that quarter million dollars a year for 40 years towards payment of the city hall that then would not be available for other allowable uses for REIT. But what we didn't want is ultimately these bonds would be general obligation bonds, i.e. like with North Kelsey, that if we don't have the REIT coming in, you're going to have to use your existing property taxes or general fund revenues to make that bond payment. Does that make more sense?
It does. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. So there's some competition for resources there. Then it lays in, basically going into the orangish color, I suppose, would be the annual debt service and annual debt service for that's funded by REIT, and then annual debt service next to that, it would be the bond costs. So then kind of looking at what the voted impact is on houses there, you can see for a $250,000 home through a $650,000 home, that's the annual impact. And then the lower sheet below that, the numbers are all identical. It just shows the monthly impact. So at $10 million, the annual impact would be $3,364 on that upper sheet and on a $250,000 home. And at $10 million, the annual voted impact on a $650,000 home would be $87. Does that make sense, everybody? Tracking, okay. So kind of moving down to the next phase, dropping past that next section of the spreadsheet there, as far as project milestones, we essentially have some target dates for completion here. These aren't hard targets, but I will treat them as such. If we miss them, it'll be for a darn good reason. Essentially, City Council Charter Review, which is what we're doing right now. Next week, I will bring back the slightly amended charter, which will not include a task description as far as evaluating shared facilities. That's what I heard from the mayor. Sorry, yeah, that'd be the 12th of February. There's a little bit of an error there. Called it a clerical error on my part. Actually, the 13th of February, then, we will go out for RFQs, proposals, and bring in a process for consultants. And then going on through there, we would do some staff review, finalize some assessments, and City Council would review the consultant report for funding consideration in the 2020 budget process in June.
I'm going to clarify one thing. We're going to keep the task in there. There is still debate. We're going to keep the task in there about looking at facilities. The Public Works P4 committee may decide that they don't need to look at it. Okay. So we'll just keep it in for safety for right now.
My bad. I thought it was pulling out. So, yeah. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I want to go back to the money.
Yeah.
So, Becky, so this is the $350 is that just for if it was only voter-approved bond. And then the other is the $600 is not just for REIT, as I thought I heard him say. That is for the combination if we did both.
Correct.
Okay. I just want to make sure I got that. Okay. Yeah. Sorry.
So your total obligation would be $600
for that amount.
Of which if we went out, one strategy is the first $4.25 million is covered by REIT.
Right.
Okay. Then we get, assuming the voters approve the remaining amount, the 5.75, the part that we would get as an excess tax levy is that $350,000,
right,
added to the $250,000 for the total debt service.
Yep.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. That was way more clear when Becky said it than when I said it. that's not on you.
And this is the point, not to put too fine of a point on it, but when we were looking at, council previous discussions around buying land and building a new building, we're looking at that $40
million. Yeah, totally.
Right. And so, in my experience, when you go out for voter-approved bonds, typically taxpayers are reluctant to tax themselves for a city hall. They will tax themselves for public safety improvements and public safety facilities. And so in our minds, we were separating out those two things and asking ourselves what portion then is really around the public safety building improvements, and that would be the voter-approved bond. And then the other piece would be paid for using existing sources of revenue. That's kind of typically the strategy that a community will use.
When you say existing sources, you're talking about REIT, what else?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Property taxes, yeah. Yeah. Sales tax revenue.
And do you see that the police remodel would be more than the City Hall? Or from what I heard you kind of say earlier, City Hall needs a lot of work, even more so.
It does, but the City Hall houses the court, which could be under the same umbrella
safety.
As public
okay.
safety. That's a big component of it. That's actually a really, that makes it work.
Right, I got you.
So,
okay.
Yeah. Okay?
Yep.
Yeah, we bumped down through the delivered or the milestones there for scope part A, scope part B. The first P4 committee meeting in February would be to find preferred alternatives and finalize the metrics. And then we would have a committee meeting project progress review in March. And then moving into April, we have a finalize the recommendation for the mayor and council meeting. And then again in June, with the consultant report in hand also, we could put those two things together for funding consideration for the 2020 budget cycle. So any feedback on that, or is that good to go?
What do you mean by finalize the metrics? What metrics are you looking at?
So one of the tasks the P4 committee is going to be putting together is creating some sort of a definable way to decide numerically what is important and what is high ranking coming out of what we should be evaluating for construction. So if you had feedback for that process, that would be a great time.
So can I give an example?
Yeah.
So for example, Councilmember Camp mentioned that he felt like there was some economic development benefit to purchasing a property that is downtown, right? You could drive more business into downtown. So one of the measurable metrics might be proximity to downtown by number of miles, right? And so something that was in the downtown would get a higher numerical score than something that was a further distance away, like this building here at Lake Tye. So it's that type of metric. So when you get to the end of this process, you've got some scores then for each one of your alternatives. And that's the way then to come back and say, so which one of these things scored higher than the other? So kind of trying to use a qualitative and quantitative analysis around measuring importance.
Okay, thank
you. Okay. That's all I have. I think we've got a pretty good
all
idea
right.
of what we need to do.
All right. So if there aren't any changes, staff will bring this back next week. Thank you, everybody. Last discussion item. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Last discussion item then is number 3. This is AB 19-020, long-term street O&M, stormwater funding. And this would be Becky.
So I thought we'd end on a happy note tonight. Because I know you guys all read it because it was such riveting information, I'm not going to go through the memo itself. I'm going to sum it up by saying we have a funding problem in streets, and we also know we have a funding problem for stormwater, especially for capital. And one of the things that is on the 6-year strategic plan for us to take a real hard look at this year is to come up with strategies on how we can address those challenges, just like we did last year with parks. You know, we want to start addressing that. Having said that, what the memo does do is talk about some of why we have challenges mm-hmm. in those funds, and just kind of introduce the issue to you guys this evening. And then I will go into a little bit of detail. So, and what I mean by streets is I mean operations and maintenance, not necessarily capital construction. Again, we have a lot of opportunities with regards to how to pay for capital construction. We do assess impact fees on new developments so that they can help pay for their impacts to our roadways. Real estate excise taxes, both the first and second quarter percent, is allowable use for streets. We also have the TBD, the 0.2% sales tax that contributes towards preservation. Of our existing roadway. But what we don't have, and what is much more of a challenge, is paying for the operations and maintenance for some of the federally mandated sign checks for how we're supposed to do crosswalk marking. We've been lucky over the last few years that we haven't had a major snow and ice event where we'd have to go out and sand or de-ice streets. Sidewalks is traditionally paid with L&M. You know, so if we have a level of service where we want to be able to address all our sidewalks in a pretty aggressive manner, that takes resources. One of the things that, as we've been digging more and more into the budget each year, that we are finding is that with existing manpower, we just can't get the same level of services that we've been doing in the past. The two main revenue streams that go into the street fund are solid waste franchise fees, which do have a moderate growth every year, and our per capita state share gas tax that go in there.
Don't we use transportation TBD money for like potholes, repaving? Don't we use that for operations at all? I thought we used some of the transportation benefit district money for like repaving Fryland.
Repaving, yes, not potholes.
Okay, so but that is operations and maintenance, isn't it? Repaving the street?
No, that's rehabilitation.
Oh,
yeah,
yeah.
And it is considered different.
Okay, so that's how we, that sounds bad, that's how we use that funding. I was going to say get away with it, but like, wait a minute,
still recording.
I know, get away with it. So, because it's rehabilitation, not maintenance. Okay.
It's considered a capital expense.
The rehabilitation is.
Right, and there's okay. No, I think there's no or very limited staff time that's charged against the transportation benefit district. I think Becky is its only employee. Is that correct?
Directly, but the design work and the inspection of the capital project is billed to the TBD.
Okay, yeah. Billed to the TBD.
As part of the project, overall project cost.
Okay.
So in essence, the TBD hires the city to do the design and engineering.
Right.
And then outsource the paving. Currently to Snohomish County. So.
Okay, all right, thanks.
The challenge that we're having in the street fund is primarily in its in the staffing costs for street fund, because that's the most expensive part of managing the streets, is having the staff available to actually do the work. I'm assuming that's about, what, two-thirds of the overall budget? And again, I'm just making that.
Yeah, probably around there.
Right. So we're having difficulty funding staff. We simply
right.
don't have enough revenue to do that.
So having said that, I don't know how much you guys are aware of the history of stormwater funds and how they came into being. A lot of cities for a long time didn't have stormwater funds. So things like street sweeping, ditch maintenance, cleaning catch basins were all costs borne by street funds. And so there was an effort out there to set up something that was more of a utility model to be able to charge fees to then be able to take care of those types of things, especially as we continue to get more restrictive environmental regulations on what we can and cannot do with the waste picked up by the street sweepers, et cetera. And to deal with flooding, it gets into the whole issue with pervious surfaces, and then how do you maintain the pervious surfaces so that they don't become slick with moss, et cetera. So a lot of jurisdictions created stormwater utilities to address some of that, as well as then to be able to build the various facilities we need to manage the stormwater runoff. Again, therein lies the problem. We have a stormwater rate. We are collecting those rates, and our rates were supposed to be designed in such a way that we can also set aside the appropriate amount of money for the capital needs associated with our stormwater utility. As you know, over the last couple of years, we've had great intentions, but we haven't had the cash to be able to build as many stormwater facilities as we would like. We have had some success at Lewis Street, for example. We were able to get some bonding to help with that. 2019's budget, though, to use as an example, is we have money in the capital portion of stormwater to be able to design for the Lake Tai Bioswale, and for Kelsey Blueberry, as well as the blueberry infiltration, correct, Brad? Mm-hmm. But what we don't have right now is the capital funds then to be able to go and do the construction of those facilities. So the reason we bring up stormwater is, there's similar and sometimes overlapping activities involved with both. So the whole point is, to let you know, we're going to be looking at this. Some of the typical funding, and I'm throwing them all out there, and we're not saying one's better than another,
is, again, just like we did with sewer, you know, at this point, the storm water utility is the only utility not paying the utility tax. And there are a lot of cities that dedicate their stormwater utility tax to the street fund to help with street operations. We also still have bank capacity in property taxes. And then quite frankly, on the stormwater side, rates. Rates can always be adjusted. If you're going to issue bonds to help pay for the capital costs of the facilities that are needed, you have to adjust your rates accordingly to make sure that you can make your debt service. The other thing that we do not have here in the city of Monroe with regards to stormwater is a general facilities charge. So for sewer and for water, when you have new development come in, they pay a general facilities charge in the sense they're buying into the membership of your existing system. Mm-hmm. Stormwater does not have one at the moment. And from what I understand with the history of that is up until the last few years, our stormwater system wasn't of a size where it made sense to charge a general facility charge. It wasn't the economy of scale. As we've been growing, it may be time to readdress that. Mm-hmm. At which point then that's an additional revenue stream to come in and help offset the cost of doing your construction. So these are the things that we're going to be looking at out there. Part of what we were looking at and wanting guidance from the council is if there's anything that we have mentioned that you guys are like, no way, don't even go there, we don't even want you to bring this back, we'd rather hear it now than taking the time to try and maybe, you know, factor that in. Mm-hmm. I'm also giving fair warning to the finance committee that beginning March, we're going to be bringing these issues to the finance mm-hmm. committee as well for a deeper dive. And I don't know if there was anything else.
I think the only other thing that we didn't talk about was reevaluating the transportation benefit district.
That's
and
right.
taking a second look to determine whether or not if we were allowed under the initial vote to create the district, to use some of that funding for actual operations and maintenance as opposed to just setting it aside for capital.
Hey.
That's the other hand.
Oh, no.
And that, too, is on the finance committee work plan.
Yeah, that's good. The two that I looked at when I read this for streets that I would like to consider would be the stormwater utility tax and then the after debt obligation, redirecting some of that. Those were the two that I would be interested in. The bank capacity, since we just used some, I'm kind of... and then the stormwater, I think the general facility charge, grant opportunities, and revenue bonds would be the three that I would look at for that. So.
Okay. Anything else?
I was just saying, that's what I was talking about.
Yeah. Okay. So
you phrased it much better.
So this will be coming back forward then to Finance Committee. And do we have anything else this evening?
I just have one comment. I went to the Jamie Bindle run yesterday, and it was a phenomenal event. So hats off to the police department and the DOC and everybody that was there. I think it was the biggest I heard from a couple people there. I don't know if
the latest I heard was over 400.
Yeah,
And it looked like it. It was very cool. It was an overwhelming event for me because of what it was about as well as the community involvement and all the partner law enforcement agencies. It was a great event.
Yeah, so hats off to you guys. And it was so nice because past city employees come back and volunteer for that event.
Quite a few.
Sherry Harris was there from Kirkland and Nancy Abel and just a bunch of people who have come back and continue to volunteer for that event every single year. I try to go, so thanks again for putting that on. I really, really appreciate
it. I'd like to take credit, but
The whole department and the whole, it's all the volunteers, so.
Quite a
phenomenal
effort, Thank you.
And I'll just, if we're done with the agenda, I'll just throw out there that Kirk and I went down to Olympia on Thursday last week with Commissioner Rousey and also we bumped into Commissioner Silva Delma down there, and we sat in a hearing. Kirk did an awesome job giving public comment. So did Commissioner Rousey. I also got up there and spoke. And a total of 80 people spoke for different organizations. Mm-hmm. 10 people did not speak in favor of. They either spoke under other, which are like technical changes, or opposed. And the other 70 people spoke in favor of it. So everybody realizes that you still need to talk about revenues and so on and so forth, but there is very strong support for doing something this year. We're hoping that it'll become a bill. Remember Schoolhouse Rock, I'm just a bill, yes, I'm only a bill. And it's not even a bill yet. So we're just trying to get it to be a bill so it can sit there on the steps of Capitol Hill and move forward, hopefully, somehow. But anyway, we'll keep you up to date on that. It's got major projects for Monroe with the Highway 2 bypass to Chain Lake, 522 both phases, and then 405 at 522, plus the trestle, and also SR9, all of which can impact the people that live either in Monroe or just outside Monroe. So, yeah, that's it.
Just a question on that. So with the extension of Highway 2 to do kind of first phase of the bypass,
yep.
Which I think was actually Dave Demarest's idea years ago on Planning Commission. Does that affect 191st at all when we want, does it?
Well, we don't know exactly what their plan is, so
okay.
We've got to find out where they're tying in exactly.
Yeah, I just think as we continue to push 191st,
and I got an update from staff on 191st last week, and we'll be bringing that forward just to give you an update at some point in the next couple or a few weeks.
Okay.
But yeah, that would be a consideration. Right now, the Highway 2 bypass, we're probably looking at, you know, the bond. I think they were talking about like a 20-year bond, so that project may be quite a ways out. But and it still needs to become a bill and everything. So All right. Anyway, I don't have anything else to report out on. Council, thank you very much. Staff, thank you very much for being here this evening. And without objection, we're adjourned. All right, thank you.
Thank you, Deborah,
for leading us through the vision and the goals and
the
strategic plan. Thank you.